Coming up on episode 199 of Wheel Bearings, we talk about the Infiniti QX55, the new Mitsubishi Outlander. Nicole goes to Texas for the Toyota Lexus Palooza and shares some thoughts on the new Corolla Cross, the BZ4X EV, the GR86, as well as the Toyota Highlander Bronze Edition. And Robbie went to Southern California to check out the new BMW i4 and iX EVs that are coming later this year. Nicole and I both drove the new 2022 Nissan Pathfinder, and Ford has unveiled its new compact pickup truck, the Maverick, starting at just $20,000. All coming up next on episode 199 of Wheel Bearings.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. All right, this is episode 199 of the Wheel Bearings Podcast. I'm Sam Abual-Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
I am Nicole Wakelin from Auto Bytel.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from, let's say, Debugger this week.
All right. Well, gang, we are back again. What have you been driving?
I haven't been driving anything.
Who wants to go first?
Okay.
Then we'll go with Nicole.
I'll go first since I didn't drive anything. It'll be super quick. I don't have much to tell you. I didn't drive anything this week. I did go down and see the BMW i4 and iX for the very odd unveiling. Since we'd kind of seen pictures of it before, it was mostly just kind of telling us about, you know, the specs and letting us sit inside and touch it and do that sort of thing. And I will say, just from sitting inside and touching things and looking at it in real life, it's BMW. I think that they're trying to steer away from the i3 of the past, which, again, I love the i3. I think it's goofy and fun, and it's a concept car that someone decided just to put on the road. but with the i4 and the iX,
and it's the cheapest carbon fiber car you can buy.
Exactly, and you can just cruise around town. It's horrible for the highway. You shouldn't, Every once in a while, I'll see someone like on I-5 in the middle of nowhere driving it, and I'm like, oh, you've made a mistake. But if you're just cruising around town, it's a great little car, and it's all quirky inside. And the iX, the i4, they are essentially, it's a 4 Series, it's an X3, X5, and they're very nice. The iX has this like wood, like center console with like the buttons kind of underneath it, and that little twist wheel that they have in there. It's like all, crystally. Anyway, it's they're very fancy. They're very nice inside. They're very much just BMWs that happen to be electric and are just slightly fancier and with a little bit of flair to let you know it's electric, but not too much.
Well, I know one of the variants of the i5 they're going to offer is going to be the first electric M badged model. What can you tell us about the performance of that one?
So, well, actually, both the iX will have the M model first.
The
i4 will have the M model first. Sorry. A reminder that it's early for me when I do the podcast. So there'll be an i4 M50 with 536 horsepower. It'll be all-wheel drive, and it'll be pricey, starting at $65,900.
That's actually not bad for an M.
Yeah, it has a range of 240 miles, so you're losing some range. The regular i4 will have a range of about 300 miles, but you're what you lose in range, you gain in fun. So that's sort of the trade-off you have to, you know, if you want something that's fast and quick and fun, and you're going to lose some range. I mean, that's the same thing with gas vehicles. If you
And still, you said 249-mile range. How often do you need more than a 249-mile range, you know?
Yeah, you're just
Pretty
cruising.
rarely.
Yeah, you're not. I'm sorry, everyone, but you're not going anywhere. The sort of downer was both all the vehicles only have support DC fast charging to 200 kilowatts. Which is, I mean, Hyundai's doing 350, everyone else is, you know, the Taycan's doing, you know, three something. Everyone's up there in the 300s, and the BMWs are down to 200. And, you know, they said, you know, they've been working on these for a while. So, yeah. But the, yeah.
But at least, you know, these are the first BMWs to offer, you know, a greater than 200-mile range, you know, which I think was one of the reasons why they opted not to launch the iX3 here in North America, because its range would have been under 200 miles, you know, on the EPA test. And I think that, you know, that's why they said, okay, we'll sell it in China and we'll sell it in Europe, you know, where, you know, there's not as much demand, not necessarily as much of a market demand for longer range EVs.
Yeah, no, it's they're pulling, you know, a lot of these companies are sort of putting the smaller lower range vehicles in other countries, Europe, China, just because in those markets, people are like, oh yeah, that's fine. But the United States, we're a big country, so we need a big battery.
Yep,
that's a honeycomb reference for all the Gen X and Boomers out there. But yeah, so you're looking at these larger cars, you know, 240 to 300 miles, and you know, again, there's. These are definitely set up for the BMW driver who wants to go EV but doesn't want that weird quirkiness that the i3 was, and so, you know, they'll both be out in the first quarter of 2022. There'll be an MIX, the M60, that'll have 600 horsepower. So if you want a 600 horsepower electric SUV, that's coming from BMW, because people love fast SUVs, Nicole. And
I don't know what you're talking about.
Like,
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What are you talking about? yeah, and they're doing that same thing that almost the same thing that Mercedes is doing. They have that big giant single piece of glass with multiple displays underneath, which everyone's very excited about. And you get in, you're like, oh, it's three displays under one piece of glass, or it's two. You know, in the BMW, it's two displays under one piece of glass, and you're just like, okay, fine.
Giant piece of glass gets you all excited. You're like, oh, wah wah.
Look at this giant piece of, yeah, it's not one giant display in either the BMW or the Mercedes. It's one giant piece of glass with multiple displays underneath it. So you're just like, oh, okay.
And, you know, Mercedes did that on the previous generation E-Class, or I guess maybe it's still the current generation. When they launched the latest E-Class like 5 or 6 years ago, that was the first one they did that did that with two large displays under a single pane of glass, and you know that's starting to become more common. You know, when it's off, it just looks like a solid sheet.
Yeah. Giant black mirror.
Yeah, but you know, to what you're saying about the pricing, you know, what I think $68,000-$69,000. That's actually cheaper than an M4, the new M4, which starts at 72, and you've got more power, although obviously more weight as well for the battery. But you know, the M4 is 473 horsepower. You've got 563 in the i4 M50, whatever, you know, which, you know, I suspect that the acceleration, I think the acceleration is probably like in the mid 3 second range with that one.
I don't think they actually. They told us the numbers for the iX.
Okay.
So the iX, the 0 to 60 in about 4.6 seconds. But okay. I don't think they gave us range numbers for the zero to 60 numbers for the i4. But it's, you know, and you also get, you know, you get the federal tax incentive, then any sort of local and state tax incentive. So you're, you know, you're pushing this 60, you know, let's just say $1,000 destination, $67,000, you know, thing down to $60,000, and then whatever, you know, random extra taxes you get off in your local, you know, $58,000. So yeah, you're it's kind of a deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, what we're starting to see now finally is EVs that, you know, compared to their gasoline equivalents, at least in the mid to high end of the market, not so much at the entry level part of the market yet, but at least in the mid to high end of the market, they're being priced equivalently to, you know, or in some cases even a little bit less than their gasoline equivalents, you know, which is the first time we've seen that. So clearly, you know, these manufacturers are starting to get more aggressive about this. You know, they've found ways to cut cost on these things and get more aggressive about trying to sell them.
Yeah, and as battery technology as it gets denser, and they can keep that 250, 300 mile range out there with, you know, as their slurry gets to, well, they're using the little batteries in the BMWs anyway, but their chemistry gets denser and more energy efficient, you know, the batteries get cheaper, and so as the batteries get cheaper, those prices are continue to go down. So, you know, I think we're a few more years till parity, to pricing parity, like equivalent to equivalent, without any sort of federal tax incentive. And then if, you know, and then we'll have the federal tax incentive, and then it'll just sort of be a no-brainer to buy an EV because it'll be so much cheaper than a regular, you know, gas car for most people. Again, if you're that guy who drives 500 miles every day, don't yell at me on Twitter that, well, every day I drive 773 miles. I'm like, okay, then it's not for you. Leave me alone.
Right,
Yeah, I
right.
mean, as long as it fits your lifestyle, you know, it's now really becoming a viable option from, you know, from a capability standpoint and a pricing standpoint.
Yeah, no, it's pretty crazy. But I didn't drive anything.
So what'd you think of the what'd you think of the design of the i4 in person and the iX?
You know, it still has that, you know, other than the giant grill. I like them. I think the i4 is just like a nice traditional sleek, you know, four-door sedan. The iX is a little bit, you know, it seems a little bit more, I don't want to say sleek again, but more sleek than you know, the X3 or the X5. I think has the roof line's been sort of adjusted. But that giant grill, those giant kidney grills, you know, BMW came out with it and everyone's all boom. BMW was like, you know what, we're gonna do what we want, we're BMW. And so you know, love them or hate them, those giant kidney grills are still there. They're not really,
even though they're even less necessary now than they were
right. Let's
before.
Make them bigger and more aggressive and more in your face, even though we don't need that.
They're not necessary. They have actually air vents underneath it on both vehicles that open and shut to adjust, you know, airflow and to, you know, to get some nice drag coefficient. So they don't really, I mean, they said that they behind these are, you know, they're we need, you know, these are important because we can put the radar and all these other sensors behind them. I'm like, you know, you can put the radar and sensors behind literally anything. It doesn't have to look like Bugs Bunny.
But, you know, as soon as you, like, when you see EVs where they've, you know, there is no grill on the front, and people are like, I don't like that. Oh, it's all flat. It's all just a piece of metal. It's all, so I guess, what, are they going to take it off and then have everybody complain and moan that, you know, oh, it doesn't look like a BMW now?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. And that's sort of happened with the Kona Electric. I like the Kona Electric a lot.
Right.
I like the Kona a lot. The Kona looks better because it has like a grill, and the Kona Electric just sort of looks weird because you're just like, well,
see?
What's going on? And I'm like,
you're that guy. You're
exactly.
saying it looks weird because it's
it
flat,
does.
Flat in the front.
I'm the guy who's just like, oh, well, maybe you should have thought of something else to put up there. I don't know, like a lightning bolt or...
Yeah, I mean, you know, you've got these two extremes. You've got Tesla that just does a flat front with no adornment at all, which I also don't like the look of. And then you've got BMW with these massive faux grills. You know, there's got to be something somewhere in between
Porsche.
There that
the
is...
The Porsche.
Is, yes, yeah. Yeah, the Taycan, I think, is a great solution. You know,
yeah.
You know, even the Mach-E, you know, it's a little, you know, it's more bold. It's not as ridiculous as the BMW, you know, in the way they've done it. But, you know, I think it's got some character to it.
Yeah. Someone asked me how come the Mach-E looks like a salamander, and now I cannot stop thinking about that. So now that's in everyone else's head. I apologize, the Mach-E.
Nice. Thanks, Roberto.
By the way, I'm seeing a lot of Mach-Es in my neighborhood. I've seen 5 in the last week. And
I have not seen a single one in the real world except for one time when I was in Detroit.
I've seen 3 ID4s. So in my anecdotal, unscientific, the Mach-E, which I think has been released quicker than the ID4 because of software issues with Volkswagen, is outselling the ID4, what did I say, 5-3.
Yeah. Well, and the another interesting tidbit of information about the Mach-E that came out the other day. Through the end of May, they've actually produced more Mach-E's this year than they have gas Mustangs. Because they've been trying to prioritize production because of the chip shortages for newer models like the Mach-E and the F-150, at least to the extent they can for that one. But the Bronco Sport, trying to prioritize those newer models rather than the ones that have been around for a while. So they've actually built more electric Mustang-badged vehicles than gas-powered ones.
Huh. Wow, crazy times.
Crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm seeing them around. The people seem happy, I guess. You know, they're driving, you know, they take...
They're not crying behind the wheel. I guess it's a good sign.
You can tell they're using that EV torque. They're still having fun taking off, you know, at the stoplight. They're like,
boom. There's no parts falling off while they go down the road. They're not running into Jersey barriers.
Yeah, they're not. Yeah, there's not. This bumper's not falling off. You know, none of the some of the issues you have with some other cars. Just the Model 3. I'll just say.
Can't imagine who that could be.
Model 3. The Model 3 had a problem with the bumpers coming off. If you didn't know, and then Tesla.
Yeah, small issue.
Tesla admitted that there was an issue. It was just, but it was just when you're going through puddles. Just don't drive through water. Come on.
Just avoid the water.
Well, I mean, it's not like it ever rains in California. So, you know, and that's where they sell most of the Teslas. So
yeah.
It's perfect. It's no problem.
If you learned anything from Tony, it's that it never rains in Southern California. Yeah. That's a deep cut from Roberto. Thank you. One more for Gen X. Millennials, look up Tony, and then enjoy the rest of the day because they're an amazing New Jack Swing group from the 90s and 80s, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Nicole, what about you? What have you been up to this
year? Yeah, bringing it back to this year, the 2022 Mitsubishi Outlander I had. And still in my driveway right now, covered with pollen. It was really pretty white. Now it's like this white, yellow, gross mess because, you know, spring in New England. I like this, and I almost feel like people are, like, their jaws are dropping because Mitsubishi gets a lot of criticism for their cars not being as fancy, as nice, as quiet. Like, and they've deserved some of it, but this is good. I really like the Outlander. This is the SEL, which is technically their top trim. They have three trims, like ES, SE, SEL, and they have launch edition versions of the top two that add extra goodies.
As you must in 2021.
As you must, or are you even making cars? So I don't have the launch edition, but I still have like the top normal trim, I guess. It's beautiful inside. In fact, I sat down and as a test, I said, because my family's in luxury cars and cheap cars and all these things all the time. So they see a pretty, you know, they're in the same revolving door cars that I am. They all bet that this cost about $15,000 more than it does.
That's impressive for Mitsubishi because they usually feel like they cost about $15,000 less than they do.
No, this one, as I have, right? And see, that's the thing. Like the fact that I'm saying I like this, I feel like everyone is like, what did she put in her morning coffee? There's no way, right? But this is $38,590. So it's not super cheap, but it's like, it looks beautiful inside. It has like these quilted leather trims and it has the captain's chairs in the second row. And it looks like what it costs. Like it doesn't look like a cheap car and it doesn't feel like a cheap car. Like that was one of the things that like older versions of Mitsubishis, they always kind of felt a little bit like a tin can. They were sort of rattly. Everything felt like it was kind of held together with like a little bit of, you know, chewing gum, maybe some scotch tape, duct tape around the, like behind the scenes, you wonder what was keeping it in one piece. Mm-hmm. You don't with this. It's very solid. And I like driving it. It's got a 2.5 liter four cylinder, 181 horsepower, 181 pound feet of torque. And it's got a CVT. I hate CVTs. I'm just going to say it every time I hate a CVT, but I feel like this one is fairly well muted. You know, you're not getting that. You're not hearing like the engine noise suddenly sounding like intrusive and is my, you know, engine going to explode through the hood of my car if you mash the gas to get on the highway. So it moves out of its way. And like this thing seats up to seven people if you get that bench seat in the second row. Mm-hmm. So it's not tiny. It's not like a crossover. It's a proper SUV-sized vehicle, and I enjoy driving it. Yeah, on record, I enjoy driving a Mitsubishi. That might be the first time I've ever said that in my whole life ever.
Well, you know, I think one of the problems for Mitsubishi, at least particularly in North America, has been that most of the vehicles that they've been selling here recently, except for the Eclipse Cross, which is relatively new. I think it's about 3 years old now. Most of them were actually pretty old, pretty old platforms. They haven't really fundamentally changed, you know, in many, like in the case of the Outlander, I think that goes back to like about 2007 or
eight. Yeah, I think it's about a decade since they, at least a decade since they've redone this.
I mean, they've refreshed the, you know, the fascia and things like that over time and done some minor interior updates, but it's basically an old platform. Now, this new Outlander is actually one of the first products produced since Mitsubishi became part of the Renault-Nissan-Mitsubishi alliance.
Right.
So
it's essentially like a Nissan Rogue.
Yeah.
Underneath, it's exactly a Nissan Rogue. The skin is like Mitsubishi. The innards are a Nissan Rogue. So like if you compare it to the Rogue, like a lot's the same. It has the same engine, same horsepower, same, you know, CVT and stuff. The Rogue is a little more well-mannered, a little bit more upscale feel, a little bit quieter, I think, riding on the inside, and has a little bit more get up and go, but it weighs a little bit less than the Outlander. So, you know, you kind of would expect that. It doesn't feel like, oh, they messed up the Outlander. No, it's just bigger, so it's not going to move as fast and as sprightly with the same powertrain in there. But yeah, it's basically like a reskinned Nissan Rogue, and I like the Rogue, so I guess it's not a surprise that I like this one too.
And it's I like the design. I think it's a good looking vehicle, and you know, I think part of it, you know, you mentioned that you can seat up to seven in this. You can't get a third row option in the Rogue anymore. They used to offer one for a few years, but they can't. They don't now. So you know, that's where some of that extra weight comes from. You know, you were mentioning the CVT being at least more refined than typical.
Yes.
Which again is one of those Nissan things. Nissan, I think, does a better job with CVTs than pretty much anybody. So, you know, it's not surprising that, you know, it was less unpleasant than most CVT powertrains.
Yeah, it's nice to see Mitsubishi, like, bringing a new car here when it's new. Because the Outlander Hybrid that they announced earlier this year is actually the last generation Outlander. So they So it's like a 2 or 3 year old car that they're bringing
the
hybrid,
updates.
And it's just they're
did
just like
the,
okay.
They did some stuff. They like last year what did they do? They increased the range went up by like the electric range went up by like 2 miles, but they gave it a little bit more horsepower for 2021, a little bit more oomph, just a skosh, a little bit more oomph. And they say the 2022 version is supposed to be here this year, sometime later this year. So they say. I don't know what later this year is. It's June.
Yeah.
So, okay. We're halfway
through. Sometime between July and December.
Yeah. December 31st. Right. 11:59
December 31st.
PM.
Right. Yeah. Technically, it came later this year.
We'll get the December deliveries report on January 3rd, you know, and there'll be three hybrids.
So yeah, technically, they will have made their announcement. Yeah.
I think there's, you know, I think the Kia Telluride put all these companies on notice, though. All these automakers on notice.
Yeah.
So you have to like bring it when you're putting out these new large SUVs, and you know, if you want to compete with them and just feeling like a nice interior, you got to at least try a little harder.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I think, you know what, it's almost like Mitsubishi heard the criticism about, you know, your regardless, they look a little, they don't look very exciting on the outside. The styling needs some updating and they feel cheap. And like Kia with the Telluride proving, we can build an inexpensive car. We can build a car that's affordable relative to other cars in the segment. And it doesn't have to feel like you went shopping in the bargain basement second section. Mm-hmm. You know, you can get one that looks and feels not just in materials, but just the drive, the ride, the handling, the quietness, the smoothness of the suspension system. All of that feels good. Like you don't have to spend a fortune to do that. So if Kia can do it, other guys can do it. Everyone has engineers. Everyone has the smarts. Everyone has the tech. You just have to take the time and make it a priority. And I really feel like Mitsubishi did that with this. The Outlander is really good. And the pricing, like it starts at just under 26 and tops out just over 35. So $35,000 for a good looking SUV that can carry seven people. Mm-hmm. That's a good price for what this is, you know?
And 2,500 start. I mean, I'm 2,500. 25,000 starting. That's a great spot for people who, you know, for families who, you know, they need that extra space because they have a lot of kids, but they don't have a lot of money. And so the idea that they can get a third row SUV without, you know, shelling out, you know, $35,000 is is I feel like pretty nice.
So it's fine. Yeah. It's finally a Mitsubishi that you might actually want to go out and buy rather than just say, you know, oh, it's the last rental car on the lot. I guess I'll take it.
Yes. Like if you have this sitting there and you said, you know, you can pick from different cars, it wouldn't be like, well, okay, fine. If I have to drive that rather than walk, I will take it. I would actually say, no, I will drive that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can't underestimate for a family, like you were saying, Roberto, there are people who want big SUVs, not because they need to pack it full of stuff and they're going on these grand adventures. They literally just have, you know, three kids and they want to be able to put the kids and their friends in the car and they need the little bit of room for groceries and, you know, sporting equipment, whatever. But they don't have the money to spend on a big bucks, huge thing that's, you know, has all the fancy. They just need a vehicle that will make it easy for their family to live. And this does that, like $25,000. That's cheap for something that can take your entire giant family out there or your kids and their friends. That's a good deal.
Yeah. Screaming deals from Mitsubishi. Who'd have thunk it?
Screaming deals.
All right. With a slightly less screaming deal, I had the Infiniti, the 2022, and this is, I think this might be the first 2022 model I've had, a 2022 Infiniti QX55. Sensory all-wheel drive, because you know you can't just call it premium or limited or platinum anymore. It's got to be something unique. But so the QX55, you know, is the latest from Infiniti, which is it's basically a QX50 with the back of the roofline sliced off. So you a QX50 with more of a fastback. And when they did the launch of this vehicle a few months back, and you know when they announced it, Infiniti kept bringing up the original FX, you know, as kind of the inspiration for this, because the FX, when it came out, I don't know, somewhere around 2000 or so, was kind of the first of the sort of coupe-like SUVs. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the original FX was built on Nissan's FM platform, which is the same platform that underpinned cars like the Z, the Nissan Z, and the GX, the Infiniti GX, and assorted other rear-wheel drive vehicles that were actually quite fun to drive. They were quite quite engaging to drive. Yeah, and you know the FX, you know, basically just took that, jacked it up a little bit, put an SUV-ish body on it. And one of my, I think probably my favorite Infiniti of all time was the FX50, which later became what, the QX70, I think, when they went to the QX badging. And I mean, that thing was a hoot to drive, you know, with that big 5-liter V8 in there. This, you can see some of the FX design inspiration in there. I actually do really like the design of this thing. I think it's, you know, quite attractive, more so than the QX50. You know, and you give up a little bit of potential cargo space in the back behind the seats. Second row, you don't really give up anything because the shape of the roof line, you know, pretty much retains the second row volume. You just give up a little cargo space in the back. But, you know, they've done some other touches to it. The tail lights and the headlights are a little bit different, have that sort of feathered look in the lights, in the signature lighting, you know, which I think is, you know, it's a kind of a unique Infiniti design touch. I think it looks good. The powertrain, you can get it with front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. The only engine in here is the Nissan's 2-liter variable compression turbo, which we've talked about in the past. You know, this is the one that can vary the compression ratio between, I think, about 8 or 9 to 1 up to as high as 14 to 1 through a rather complex mechanism in the bottom of the crankcase. At 268 horsepower, 280 foot-pounds of torque, as long as you leave it in normal or sport mode, it's great. I would definitely not recommend putting it in eco mode, because in eco mode, it seems like it just keeps the compression ratio at whatever the minimum is, and when you go to accelerate away from when the light turns green or from a stop sign or something, it can be a little sluggish. Mm-hmm. there was definitely some slowness to respond in that case, so I just put it in sport mode all the time and it was fine. It was quite nice to drive. I think there's plenty of performance here. It's certainly no big honking V8, But, you know, it, I think for most people, it's more than adequate. You know, this one had 20-inch wheels. It has Infiniti's direct adaptive steering system. The sensory is pretty much the, I think, the top of the line, fully loaded version with pretty much everything in it, including the ProPilot assist system, heads-up display, traffic sign recognition, all that good stuff. I think, you know, I like the size of the QX55. You know, it's kind of that compact to slightly mid-size size class, you know, not too big. It's definitely, you know, five passengers, no thought even of a third row. You know, so this is similar, so actually maybe even a little bit smaller than the Rogue size-wise. It still has Infiniti's dual touchscreen infotainment system, which is never been crazy about it.
What? You don't love that?
No, I mean, you know, I think functionally
that was sarcasm,
it's not,
Sam.
Yeah. part of the issue is, you know, you've got these two separate touchscreen displays that they're totally mismatched, you know, in the way they look. Like one, the top one or the bottom? One of them is much glossier looking than the other one. You know, it just doesn't look right. I don't know what they were thinking with that. But at least for the top screen, so, you know, they split the media stuff, you know, so if you're using CarPlay or Android Auto or radio or whatever, all that stuff, or navigation, that stuff shows up in the top screen. The bottom screen is mostly relegated to controls, climate controls and settings and things like that. So you're mostly using the top screen anyway, which is up closer to your line of sight, but it's also further away from you. But Infiniti does have it's a touchscreen, so you can use it as a touchscreen, but it's just a long reach. Mm-hmm. But they've also got a central control knob that allows you to control all that stuff as well, which I prefer using, you know, in this kind of scenario. The price tag on this thing, all in, including delivery, $58,975. So, you know, closing in on $60,000 for this. I'd be, you know, I like it. You know, I think the
Wish you could see Sam's face as he started. He's like closing in $60,000. There's like this like grimace that you guys couldn't see before he said anything else.
You know, I mean, they start under $40,000 for a front wheel drive, the base front wheel drive version. And, you know, I think if you're going for an entry to mid level version of this, you know, I think it's a really nice premium crossover. You know, getting up into the $60,000 range, I'd have a hard time recommending this against some of the competitors, like, you know, say a BMW X4, you know, which is a similar size class, or the Mercedes GLC coupe, things like that. But, you know, for what it is, you know, it's definitely good to drive. You know, I think it handles really well and it feels good on the road. And as long as you don't put it in eco mode, it's fine. It's all good.
Just don't put it in eco mode.
Yeah, definitely never put it in
never.
Eco.
Isn't that just kind of a rule of thumb, like for cars in general? It doesn't matter what the car is, don't put it in eco mode. 99.9% of the time, you don't want to drive
that way.
Yeah, it depends.
I mean, if you're you know, taking a long highway road trip, you know, you can put it in eco mode.
No, you can't. Not, Sam, you're lying. I don't think I've ever in my whole life willingly kept a car in eco mode for more than the 2 minutes it takes me to see how it drives in that mode. Then I'm like,
well,
done.
If I have a long drive, I'll put a car in eco mode. Because now,
I never use it.
As I've gone from on staff to freelance, I'm like, oh, I got to pay for this gas myself.
Exactly. If you're paying for the gas,
if you're paying for the gas and you don't mind the soulless drive offered by many in eco mode, then feel free.
But I mean, but if you're just like cruising like 70 miles an hour down the freeway for like hours on end, you're like, all right, I'm just going to put it in eco mode.
Okay, fine.
Because I'm not doing anything exciting. The variable compression, I remember when this came out, I mean, everyone was like, oh my God, this is amazing. But then the dividends that it pays off is just like, all right. Have they improved it? Is it better? I mean, it's
no, it hasn't really changed.
Oh, yeah. It's this really great thing that they're doing, but then you're like, oh, we saved, you save 1 or 2 miles per gallon. You're like, okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah. You know, the claim for it when they brought it out was it gives you the performance of a V6 with the fuel economy of a four-cylinder, which is mostly true. The QX55 is EPA rated at 25 miles per gallon combined, 22 city, 28 highway. I think I got about 24 or so when I was driving it, which is fine. It's not great. This is not a vehicle. If what you're looking for is maximum fuel efficiency, any of the vehicles that have this engine in there are not going to be the ones that give you that fuel efficiency you're looking for. But if you were thinking about getting something with a V6, but you want something with better fuel efficiency, it will give you 2 or 3 miles per gallon more than you might have gotten with a V6. It's generally a lighter solution than a V6. Mm-hmm. According to Nissan, this engine is about 100 pounds lighter than their 3.5 liter V6, which offers similar performance. Mm-hmm. So, that means especially on a vehicle like this where it's a transverse mounted engine, you've got less weight on the front wheels. Yeah. So that's a good thing. So it's going to handle a little better. It is a very smooth engine. One of the unique things when I first talked to the chief engineer on this engine when they launched it a couple of years back at the LA Auto Show, he was explaining how it, because of the way the mechanism works, there's actually less side loading on the pistons when they're going up and down. So there's less friction, but there's also it's better balanced. So they don't have to use a balance shaft on this thing. It is actually quite a smooth engine to drive. It doesn't vibrate very much, smoother than Nissan's comparable four-cylinder engines. So it is quite pleasant to drive in that respect. So it's a reasonable alternative. I mean, it does add complexity to it. I'll be curious to see 5, 6, 8 years down the road when these things have been around for a while, how well they hold up, because there's a lot of stuff going on down there.
I kind of hope that as time progresses they can fine tune it and maybe squeeze 5-10 miles out of it, MPG, and then maybe mate it with a hybrid and then just make it super insane complex. But the technology I was very excited about, and just because you're like we're very in the conversion, I'm like, what, and my head exploded, and I'm like, yeah, you're getting 2 miles a gallon.
Wait a minute.
Okay, well, this is really cool though. You got to start somewhere, and that's been my position when it comes to the variable compression Nissan engine. It's just like, you got to start somewhere. Let's see where this goes. Come on.
So they've started. Just give them a little time to improve it, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think by the time they do that with this engine, they'll more likely have shifted to something electric or hybrid, though. And I can't see them getting a whole lot more out of this particular engine.
Oh, wow.
I think this is probably going to be a relatively short-lived design. Yeah,
could
probably
be
less than 10 years.
It's a cool science experiment.
But, yeah, no, it is. I mean, as an engineer, I love it. I think it's a really interesting solution.
Yeah.
But as a product,
nerd, it's like, oh my gosh. But as a consumer, you're like,
yeah. Whatever. Practically, everyone's like, this engine doesn't do anything to make my life better. Why? Engineers are like, but it's cool.
It's cool.
I mean, you get a Toyota Highlander hybrid, that is significantly larger than this and gets 35 miles per gallon.
That's a tough Yeah.
And you know what? Wait, I have to trip because I finally remembered to look at the MPG I got on my Outlander. Like, everyone's criticizing getting these texts, you got to look. Okay, so I looked, everybody. So it's rated 24 city, 30 highway for 26 combined. I beat that. I got 27.8 combined. And it was probably a 50-50 mix of driving for me between driving on the highway and driving just around town. So I feel like I outdid their, average fuel economy. There you go. See, so everybody stop sending me tweets saying I don't know the fuel. I looked, I mentioned it, done.
And you didn't even put it in eco mode. So imagine,
imagine the fuel economy you would get if you drove it with a light foot and put it in eco mode. Because I did not do that.
Yeah, we're not, journalists aren't typically light feet.
That is not me in any way, shape, or form.
That's not what people pay us for. You're like, well, I'm going to baby this car. You're like, that's not me.
Nope.
unless you're trying to do a range test with an EV or something like that.
put it on the magic cruise control.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yes.
All right. So why don't we shift next to, something by the time this show comes out, the embargo should have lifted on this, which is another Nissan SUV, which I don't think you've driven, Robbie, but Nicole and I both have, the Pathfinder.
Yes.
The 2022 Pathfinder. Let's touch on this briefly. What did you think of it?
I liked it. I thought it was good. I mean, overall, I was happy with it. I thought it was, I don't know that it's a ginormous improvement over the past one. But I did think it was an improvement. I liked it. They let us do a little off-road course in it at the launch that I was at. I think you did it. Did you drive it in Detroit, I think, Sam?
Yeah, we took it to the Holyoke's ORV park.
Okay.
And tried it there.
So you did. So we drove it out in Montana, and they had like a little off-road course for us to do. And it was pretty, it handled it well. I mean, there was some, if you're going to take your Pathfinder off-road, it could actually do pretty impressively, a little bit more than you probably think it could. I don't think people really appreciate what some of their SUVs can do. They think that unless it's like all tricked out and all these extra things, you can't go in the dirt, you can't go up some rocks, and you can do pretty good in this. I liked it. I thought it was nice to drive. I thought it was quiet. It was comfortable. I mean, it sort of checks all the boxes that you want for a family vehicle. So overall, I liked it. What about you, Sam?
Yeah, I thought it was probably a more significant improvement than it sounds like you thought over the previous generation Pathfinder. Certainly the design I think is a lot more interesting. The old one was just kind of a mushy blob. It was kind of undistinguished, if you will. I think this one, it's got a little more aggressive look to it. They've tried to recall, the essence of the original Pathfinder of the 90s, early 90s, or maybe it was even 80s, I think, with sort of the bulging fenders, the blistered fenders. That first generation Pathfinder had the three horizontal slots in the front edge of the hood. They've tried to incorporate a little bit of that into the top of the grill of this thing. It's pretty subtle. I mean, most people probably aren't even going to notice it, but if you know what you're looking for in a Pathfinder, it's there. I think the interior was certainly a lot better than the old Pathfinder. Glad to see Nissan has finally started to adopt better infotainment displays. One of the things I've complained about with Nissans for years is that whoever they bought their displays from for their center screens, they got like the worst, cheapest displays that anybody could find. They were dim, low contrast. You couldn't see them with sunglasses on. They were terrible. And like the Nissan Leaf and the Altima and others still use those displays. They finally have a better quality display in this one. And the other big change, is the transmission. They dropped the CVT from this one and went with a version of the ZF 9-speed, which I thought was a lot better to drive in this vehicle.
I actually agree with that. I've already stated my hate of CVTs, so I did like the 9-speed, and it was, from that point of view, it was definitely much nicer to drive. I think that was a lot of why it felt like a quieter ride was a part of that, was that it just, because it has an actual, gears and it's shifting, you don't get the same kind of whine. So I did like that. And you're right, I'm remiss in mentioning that the infotainment was greatly improved. The screen is very, very crisp. That was a huge improvement.
The interface is still the same.
Yeah, you don't get, it's not any easier to use than it was, but it's easier to see. It just looks more refined.
It looks
too. Mm-hmm. There's just, because the clarity of the screen is better than before.
It looks nicer when you plug in your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yes.
Exactly. Okay. When you plug in CarPlay or Android Auto, it's way better to use.
It is.
You can actually see it.
It is amazing how much a bad display sort of like takes a knock off a car. Whenever I have like regular, like my wife or other people get in the car that I'm driving and the display's not good, they're like, oh, what's that? It doesn't matter what the car is, how wonderful or great it is. I'm like, this car's really good. And they're like, yeah, but look at this. I have to look at this all day because you have
to. It really does make, it's a huge part of it. It's this, you know, it, those screens dominate the dashboard in your car and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And if they're crappy screens, there's crap dominating your dashboard. I don't think that's the first impression anybody wants their car to make.
Yeah. So you know, when the original Pathfinder came out, it was, you know, it was clearly going after like the Forerunner. It was this sort of off-road beast. It was
more of a traditional body-on-frame SUV.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, they're talking about, you know, this return to what it was, and you know, you have a little bit of off-roading, but is that just sort of like to get a few more people in, so it feels like they're trying that, and as opposed to really trying to compete against the Forerunner.
I don't think it's trying to be like this off-road monster or anything, but I think they genuinely want people to know, like the what we were going over. You know, it was a fairly steep hill that we were going down, and it's just, you know, dirt and sort of those loose, not like boulder rocks, but you know, loose rocks. If you don't hit them right, you're gonna, you know, slip and have to go back and try it again. So it wasn't like super technical driving or by any means, but it was the kind of thing that if you had a vehicle that really wasn't up for it, like not every SUV would do that without you having to take five tries to go up that hill that you just came down 5 minutes ago. This made it up on the first try with everyone, and it made it up without a lot of fuss and a lot of finagling, and you know, people didn't have to go backwards and come back down, which you'll sometimes see when they have you take an SUV just a little too far. People that aren't used to driving off-road get stuck and have to start back and just try give it another try. This didn't do that, and that's, you know, the number of times you see that on these programs when an SUV just can't quite do it because the driver doesn't have the skill. You didn't need the skill in the Pathfinder. It did what it was supposed to do and just kind of crawled over those little rocks. So hardcore off-roader,
no.
But if you really want to go in the dirt and you really want to take a little bit of adventuring and you want to, you know, go a little bit further than a typical SUV, it can do it. It definitely can do it.
Yeah, I mean, it'll get you to a remote beach or, you know, down a trail to a cabin, you know, to a lakeside cabin or something like that, you know, where, you know, it's not paved, you know, but as you said, Nicole, you know, not for the really technical stuff, but you've got things, you know, you've got features like hill descent control and drive modes with like mud and rut and snow modes. So, you know, it'll get you through most of the stuff that most people are ever going to encounter. I can tell you 99.99% of Pathfinder buyers are never going to go to a place like Hollyoaks ORV Park,
right,
you know, or any other place like that. But, you know, if you get into, you know, some slightly rough stuff, it'll generally get you through.
And
you know, I mean, this is a competitor for, you know, Hyundai Palisade, Kia Telluride. You know, it's in that size class, that weight class.
I always think too, like, even though they're different, they're kind of the same in some ways. Like if you're buying an SUV and you live someplace where it snows a lot, not like snow is crawling up, you know, rocks on a, you know, on a dirt hillside in Montana, but you still, you know, that it has the capability to do that and that it handles well and does that kind of thing. When you do have really crummy weather and you're driving through, you know, those berms of snow that are half snow, half ice, half sand, whatever your, you know, highway department has thrown on the roads and you're trying to get through that stuff, it bodes well for it being able to do well in the crappy kind of everyday driving that people have to do where it snows. So even though we didn't get to drive in the snow, it felt like a good omen for me to handling well in bad weather.
You get confidence.
Oh, and
yes.
Yeah. And speaking of this being a family hauler, you know, one of the interesting features that they have on this that I just remembered is for the second row seats, if you put child seats in there, the last thing you want to be doing if people are trying to get in and out of the third row is have to remove your booster seats or child seats from the second row seats to get in and out, and then have to put it all back. The way these second row seats are set up, you can put in the child seat, and then when you release it, the whole seat tips up, and so you have room to access the third row without having to remove the kid's seat from that. Yeah, it's a very nice, a very handy feature.
And you know what I liked about it too is you can, and I'm trying to remember the buttons, but there is a button on the back of that seat. So if you're in the third row, like if for some reason you're using that third row as an adult, I think if you sit in very many third rows, everybody's been left back there once and you're like, hey, can somebody let me out of the car? I can't reach this to get out.
Yeah, there's one button release.
Yeah, there's a button release. So it will put, so you can be sitting in the back in the third row and you can hit the button and release it and go forward so you can get out. So you don't have to wait for someone to remember that you're trapped back there. So I actually like that you can do that and not wait for the driver to come around and let everybody out.
And these will be available at Nissan dealers this summer.
Cool.
I don't remember the pricing information. I'll have to find that, and I'll add it in the show notes. But, so these are coming soon. So next up, Texas. You spent some time in Texas this week, Nicole.
I did. I'm calling it Toyota Lexus Palooza because it was all the Toyota Lexus things you could possibly want and the Lexus things we can't really talk some. About.
But not, yes. not Toyota-thon? Not
Toyota-thon. This was cooler than Toyota-thon.
Oh, okay.
Because there was shrimp. No. So they had, it was kind of as if Toyota and Lexus said, look, we haven't done an auto show in a year, so we're going to create our very own company auto show. And we just spent the day at their HQ. We had product specialists. We talked, you know, we got the reveals of all the cars. We could get our hands on them, take pictures, see them, play with stuff. They showed us a lot of new technology. And there were, I'm counting, 1, 2, 3, 4 different new, I feel like there was a fifth one. Am I missing one on that list, Sam? I don't know. There were a lot. There were a lot of cars that they revealed. Is that right? So they did the Corolla.
The GR86.
Yeah.
The Lexus LFZ, US debut, the BZ4X, the Corolla Cross.
I felt like there was something else. You're probably right. It was so many. It felt like you were.
There was a special edition of the Supra, the A91 CF edition.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking
fiber.
Of.
There was a new TRD Pro Tacoma, Trail Edition Tacoma, a TRD Sport Off Road 4Runner. The most important one of all, or actually second most important, the Bronze Edition Highlander, and then of course the Nightshade Prius.
Yes, which I'm going to, you know, the Prius is the Prius, and they had this Nightshade Prius, and they did this presentation that was like, behold the badass Prius. I'm like, you guys.
It's a Prius.
It doesn't, I appreciate that the black looks cool, but it's still a Prius underneath
the
all up,
that. The upside is at least you don't really see as much of the detail of the Prius design.
Oh, snap.
It actually
Ouch,
disappears, the Prius.
It's a stealth Prius.
It's a stealth Prius. No one knows you're driving a Prius. But it was good. It was neat to see the Corolla Cross was a good looking car, especially inside. I felt like on some of these, they stepped up the interiors a little bit, because Toyota is a very mass market brand and not all of their cars look great on the inside, especially in base, base trims. I liked the Corolla Cross. Now, we didn't get to drive any of these. We literally just got to, crawl over them, look under the hood, see the interiors.
It was just like an auto show.
Yeah.
It was exactly like an auto show. They even had little white sheets that they pulled off of things for us to make it feel like an auto show. Yeah. They had people guiding you with like next press conference this way, as if there were other ones you could get confused and go the wrong direction at Toyota HQ when so it was good to see these, and it did make you feel like Toyota's making a real effort to get some interesting things in the pipeline. There's a lot of special edition stuff. But that, like you said earlier, Sam, like if you don't have a launch edition / special edition / bronze, red, off-road, limited, whatever edition, then you aren't really building cars anymore, right?
Right.
I think the funniest thing that I'm going to say, the BZ4X.
The naming of this thing is just so ridiculous.
Okay, what was great is one of the journalists in the group said, hey, is your product team going to come up with a name for this when it hits production?
Yeah,
that doesn't
saw that.
Sound
I
like a
that.
Copier.
Yeah, I saw that. And Lisa, I can't remember her name, the manager for the EV stuff, explained that, BZ is going to be our branding for Beyond Zero for our EVs. It's not too late to change that decision.
Yeah. Right. And I'm sure everyone will figure it out. But you see car companies that are moving away from these the alphabet soup numbers to actual names. And here, let's give it a name that nobody is going to be able to remember for at least a year. We're all going to be like the B4, the Z, the X, the long one. None of us are going to know what it's called.
So Let's talk about that one first some more. This is going to be Toyota's first purpose-built EV that they're launching. Is it? Yeah, I guess they had the Scion IQ, the electric version of the Scion IQ, but this is really their first modern purpose-built EV. This thing is a RAV4-sized crossover. What did you think of it? They showed it in Shanghai in April.
Yeah, it looks good. I mean, it does look good. It looks very sleek. You know how we were saying the Prius looks like a Prius, you know, and it's sort of like this looks slick. Like they sort of took the idea that, you kind of don't want EVs to scream, I am an EV, therefore I'm important. And, you want them to sort of kind of look like regular cars with just some slight
modification. You don't want virtue signaling?
What's that? Yeah, you don't want virtue signaling necessarily. Because I think the days of that are really going away. It's not so much, when you were buying a Prius and that was the only thing out there, like that and one other hybrid, you were virtue signaling that I have purchased a Prius. That's not the case anymore. You're just like, no, I'm getting newer tech. I'm getting environmentally friendly stuff. And they've gotten away from that look. And I think it looks very modern. It looks very sleek. And it feels like a good choice. I mean, looking at it and seeing it, I thought it was an appealing car. And I think most of the people there said, yeah, it looks pretty good, even though it's named after a copy machine.
did they give any indication of how this thing was going to be priced?
I don't believe that we got pricing. I should have opened up my giant 8,000-page document with information from this event. But I don't believe we had pricing. Most of these things we didn't have pricing on yet. So
yeah, I saw like more information as we get closer to production, which is just like, well, you've already shown off the car. Now you're showing it off again. Please just give us like a little, like an inkling of information, something.
Yeah.
This one's coming next year.
Yeah. So this one's got a little ways to go.
Yeah.
But I feel like with the pricing, like just in their conversations with Toyota, when everyone was saying about all of these, they're aiming to make even, something that's an EV or even their snazzier, fancier, sporty things, they're still trying to make sure that these are affordable cars. They're not Kia. They're not making the super affordable cars, but they're not trying to price themselves into suddenly we're a luxury car maker. They have Lexus for that, So they're keeping things in a reasonable realm given what the vehicles are.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be an interesting segment to watch, because by this time next year or somewhere, middle of next year, you're going to have this BZ4X, you're going to have the Nissan Ariya. There's going to be the Hyundai Ioniq 5, the Kia EV6, the VW ID4, and probably some others that haven't been publicly announced yet. I think probably at least one from GM, in this same kind of compact to midsize crossover segment. When you sat in it, I think externally they said it's roughly the size of a RAV4. Did it feel roomier inside than a RAV4?
That one I didn't get into. It feels RAV4 sized. It looks like, from the outside, it looks squishier. Like it has, the dimensions don't look quite that big. But looking at the inside,
it looks like it's a little lower profile.
The profile's lower, but it doesn't seem like on the interior that you're compromised space wise. It's one of those sort of optical illusion situations. Like however they've done it, it doesn't feel like suddenly like if you're sitting in the back seat and you're taller, your head's going to be hitting up against the headliner. So, I believe that. Like it seems like it could be about the same, comparable to the RAV4.
Okay. Near term, I think out of all these things that they talked about this week, probably the one that is actually the most important product is the Corolla Cross. What is a Corolla Cross?
It is a Corolla through and through, but it is a crossover, hence the name Corolla Cross. They did not try to mislead you there. They've said that this is, I think that it's going to replace, what's the, they didn't say this, but I, what's
CHR.
The, oh, that's, thank you.
CHR.
CHR. I think the CHR
well,
is going
to. I think they actually said that the CHR was going to stay, because this kind of slots in between the CHR and the RAV4.
It does slot in between, so it has its spot, but it looks so much better than the CHR. Yeah. Good gravy. It looks so much better. So, I mean, if I honestly, there's that point where you're like, well, if we change every vehicle by 1 inch and give each one an extra 5 horsepower, we can slot in 8,000 different sizes of crossovers. How many do you need to slot in there? I feel like it seems like the Corolla Cross is going to be a better option to me than the CHR. So I don't know what sales will do when it comes out, you know, if CHR is rocking it and Corolla Cross isn't. But I think Corolla has bigger brand recognition. People know Corolla. I couldn't for a minute there think what the heck the CHR was called. Like I have out, yeah. Like, you know, another copier. But I can remember Corolla Cross, you know. It looks really good. The interior of this is fantastic. Like it really, really looks good. So I think it's going to be a solid vehicle. And I think it's cool to expand the Corolla lineup. You know, Corolla has a lot of history. It has a certain cachet to it. And I think that this will expand that. So I think Toyota's going to do well with it. I think it's going to do very well.
Yeah, I mean, they said they've sold something like 50 million Corollas
right.
since the original one debuted in the late 60s.
Yeah, so it's like the Corolla has some brand history there. So it makes sense to where crossovers are all the rage right now to give one to Corolla.
Slap a,
you know, to expand that. Yeah.
Slap a
Corolla sticker on there and call it done.
Pull a Mustang and throw the name of an established vehicle on a crossover.
Exactly. And, you know, they'll keep it in line with the Corolla. They said, no, you know, this is a Corolla. We're not trying, you know, Corolla's affordable and fun and all those things. And they're trying to keep that aesthetic when they build the Corolla Cross. It looks like they did. Again, we haven't driven any of this yet, but it from appearances, it looks like that's exactly what they did.
And this one's coming this fall, right?
Yeah, this one's sooner. This one's not as far off.
Yeah.
Like as you were talking, like the CHR and now the Corolla Cross, is it going to eat into the CHR sales? I feel like it probably will. I feel like it's going to cannibalize some of those. I don't see I see a few CHRs on the road, but it's such a weird, like, wait, what is that which one? Is that the Honda or the Toyota one?
I'm not sure I've ever seen a CHR on the road around here. I mean,
we have so few of them. I see them on rare occasion. Yeah. Do we see them up here?
I think it's going to go the way of the Honda Fit. I think what's going to happen is they're going to keep it around for a little while. The people who like it, but it's just going to go away. But I think the Toyota, the SUV that needs to go away is the Venza. Why is that? Why is the Venza a Venza? Why is that a thing?
You want the Venza to go?
You know, it's basically,
it's a nice,
you know,
it's a RAV4.
It's a RAV4 with a fancier looking body.
That's
on
it. And the RAV4 is fine.
And it's a it's hybrid only.
Yeah, no.
It's your RAV4 for fancy people.
Yeah, just get rid of it and keep the RAV4. That's,
yeah. I mean, you know, through the first 3 months of this year, through the end of March, Toyota sold 10,000 CHRs. So that's about a 40,000 a year run rate, which is not great.
Yeah.
I mean, especially by Toyota
standards. Yeah, by Toyota standards, that's
what is, you know, for what is effectively a fairly mainstream vehicle. You know, although the styling is not that mainstream, you know, by comparison, you know, in that same time period, they sold 69,000 or 72,000 Corolla sedans.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, you know, and I think that if I recall, I think they said that they're expecting probably about a third of Corolla badged vehicle sales going forward. You know, at least in the first year, are probably going to be this Corolla Cross. You know, so that's going to be selling in a lot higher volumes than the CHR ever.
I think the CHR
and the CHR is front drive only in North America. They do an all wheel drive version overseas, but yeah.
I don't think it's long for this world. I think it's
I really don't.
Like the Fit, I think the Fit was a great little car. I think the Fit was wonderful, but for this market, it's just like when I talk to Honda about it, they're like, the Fit sells this many. The CRV sells this many. Like, what are we going to do? I'm like, in this market, I'm like, all right. Well, I mean, when you throw numbers, when you're using logic and numbers, fine.
Yeah. When you take all of your numbers and you figure things out, whatever, fine. Get rid of it.
Math.
Well, you know, in that same first quarter of this year, Toyota sold 114,000 RAV4s.
Yeah.
Jeez.
So. They sold 10 times, more, 11 times as many RAV4s as they did CHRs.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
The Corolla Cross is going to destroy the CHR.
It is. I think that, like, they're not getting rid of it yet, but I just think the right bean counters have to look at those numbers and do your little math there, Roberto, and that's the end of it. It's gone.
The one thing that did kind of surprise me about the Corolla Cross is that they did not announce a hybrid version at launch, which is unusual, I think, for Toyota right now, because they have a hybrid version of the Corolla, which, by the way, actually is selling, I believe, is selling better than the Prius is at this point. But they also, RAV4 hybrid accounts for almost a quarter of RAV4 sales now.
Yeah, there was talk about why they had done that, and of course there wasn't a lot of information about it, but I don't know. I feel like there will probably be a, just give it time. It hasn't even gotten here.
They'll probably announce it when they give you information about the BZ4X4000-32. you have to sort of spread out the news. Automakers are really good at spreading out the news. So we'll get some hybrid Corolla Cross news probably at like an auto show like early next year, like a proper, we're all outside in a big giant warehouse staring at things under bad lighting. Then it'll be like,
or in November at the LA Auto Show.
Oh yeah, or at the LA Show.
Yeah,
that could be.
Yeah. All right. let's see what else. Anything about the GR86?
They had it there. it was there on a stage. No, that also looks pretty good. They had that on display for us. It looks good. The interior is on that one. They did a lot on that. Like it felt, the 86 felt kind of like it was harsh looking and it looked cheap, but it was kind of plasticky. And this is greatly upgraded inside. It was worth the oohs and ahs that everyone gave it. And it's going to be a fun little sporty thing to fling around the road when you finally get your hands on it.
Have you seen the BRZ in real life? The new BRZ?
I have seen. I don't know if I've seen it in real life. Have I seen it? I can't remember if I've seen it.
I'm gonna ask you
life.
What you think of which one looks nicer, or which one would you? I mean, they're the same car, but like, which one do you like better?
I like the 86. Something about the 86 appealed to me more because it was also bright red and beautiful in that display, and it's hard not to like a bright red sporty car. I don't know. Did they pick the right color? I think I go the GR86. I liked how it looked. I thought the interior was good. You know what? And I have to, there was one, I got to mention that the bronze edition of the Highlander. Is that what it was, Sam? You knew it. You said it earlier. So
that's only because I'm looking at it.
Okay. I know. I can see him. Like, he's staring at everything right on the screen. So the bronze edition Highlander, which they say is going to, appeal to a younger crowd and, give it some pop and personality. But we have to put a picture up where somebody has to look for the interior of that car. It has this diamond patterned seats. They're like this fun, and there's some like bronze trim on the seats. And Ed Kim, who is another journalist, pointed out to me, and now this is all I will ever see. It looks like a Romulan thing from Star Trek. It looks like somebody
Bird
looked at the outfits, the Romulan.
Oh.
Yeah, no. The
yes.
clothes, they're the sort of gray.
Yeah.
Sam is nodding. It looks just like, so now I will forever think of that as the Highlander Romulan edition. Even so, somebody that worked on that has to be a nerd, because once you see it, it's like, oh my God, that's exactly what it looks like.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you see it, Sam? Now that you're looking at it,
I do.
It's like, oh gosh.
Yes.
Yep.
Yep.
There you go.
All right. So that's all the reason you need to buy a Highlander Bronze Edition.
Right. It's the Highlander Romulan Edition.
If you are a Romulan fan, it's the one for
that's
you.
That's your Huckleberry.
It's the SUV for
go
you.
For that.
Yep. In fact, let me make sure I download that now before I forget. All right. So what about Lexus? They showed the LFZ, which they showed in Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts on that?
I love the way the front of that looks. I absolutely love it. I love that the spindle grill isn't really a spin. I mean, I know it's still there technically, but without all the black and the little, hey, we're trying to make this look fancy with it making it EV'd, it looks actually really nice. I love the way the front of it looks and the way the lighting effects are done on the front of that. It looks like straight out of the future. It's an attractive looking vehicle. It looks very fancy.
And I'm assuming that you can't tell us anything about the new NX.
What new NX?
That's what
exactly.
I thought. Okay.
what What about the Lexus teammate system? Did they give you any demo rides or give you a chance to try that out?
They did have the opportunity to try teammate. Unfortunately, due to the timing of my flights, I didn't get to stay to experience it.
Oh, bummer.
So I do not have any firsthand on that, unfortunately.
All right. Well, that sounds like they had a ton of stuff to show off there. But there's also more news coming out this week. By the time this show comes out, it will the world will have seen the new Ford Maverick, which is something I think Ford is saying it's something that nobody saw coming, even though we've seen it coming for months and months,
exactly.
for years. This is Ford's new compact pickup truck. And it's it's the first time Ford has done a unibody pickup truck. So this is a truck that slots in underneath the Ranger. It's built on Ford's C2 platform architecture, which is the same architecture as the Escape, the Bronco Sport, as well as the Focus and Fiesta that are still sold in Europe and in Asia. And what do you guys think of this?
I am a fan of small pickup trucks. Bring back Mini Truck and Magazine. That's all I'm going to say. There we go. That's all. That's my only.
I love it. I'm excited. I like small pickup trucks. I appreciate that people need gigantic full-size pickup trucks that can, you know, do a day's work and go out on the ranch. But I like the idea of the smaller truck that still gives you a little bit of truck utility and capability without, you know, being this giant behemoth that you need the dimensions of this are SUV-like. You know, they're small enough that you could drive this in a city and not feel like you're going to take out cars along the side because the streets are so narrow. I'm excited about this. And I like the name Maverick.
Yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting to see how well this one does. I mean, right now, you know, but this is coming out this fall. You know, it's going to be basically a class of two vehicles, at least in the U.S.
Yep.
The Hyundai Santa Cruz, which is launching this summer,
yes,
and the Maverick. The Maverick is about 4 inches longer than the Santa Cruz, but it's got a more the design is more traditional Ford truck like, you know, not quite as modern.
Well, and the Santa Cruz doesn't look truck like in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
It has that little bed on the back, but if you even from the profile of it, it doesn't have traditional truck styling to it. It's like you look at it and you think, what happened to that SUV or what's going on there? Where the Maverick, you're like, little truck.
It's like it's more Baja than truck.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, or I was going to say the original Subaru Brat.
Love
yep.
the Brat.
You know, yeah. This one, you know, definitely has a more truck shape to it, although, you know, it is a unibody. There's not a separate bed to it. What's really interesting about this, you know, this thing is 11 inches shorter than a Ranger. You know, so if you know the size of a Ranger, this thing is almost a foot shorter than that, and a couple of inches lower as well to the ground. But I think what's really fascinating is Ford is really pricing this thing aggressively. The starting base price is going to be $19,995 plus like $1,500. So, you know, $21,500. Which makes it the cheapest Ford you can buy in the U.S. And
wow.
It's coming standard with a hybrid powertrain. And it's an updated version of the new hybrid system that's in the Escape. And you get for $21,000, that's what you're going to get is the hybrid. 40 miles per gallon city is what they're saying. This thing is small enough that, you know, like you said, it is going to be reasonable to drive in the city. You've got a 4.5-foot bed. It's got, you know, the cabin is big enough to hold five people, as long as they're not too wide in the back seat. It's going to be similar size cabin to what you get with an Escape or a Bronco Sport. One of the other interesting details about this, you can also get it with an optional 2-liter turbo 4-cylinder. If you get the 2-liter EcoBoost, with all-wheel drive, you can option it up to be able to tow up to 4,000 pounds with it, which, you know, for a small truck like this is pretty impressive. One of the neat details is what they're calling the flex bed. because, you know, they're targeting this at, you know, more entry level. I mean, this is going to be Ford's entry level vehicle in North America, because they don't, you know, you can't get the Escape or the Fusion or the Fiesta anymore. This is the cheapest Ford branded vehicle you can buy. And so they've done things like mold in to the bed slots and divots where you can do some DIY accessories. Like, for example, they show, you know, you can buy an aftermarket bike rack to put mount bikes in the bed, or they give you instructions on how to make your own bike rack for about $45 from a 2x6 and a couple of fork mounts and some screws. There's a video and some instructions that you can download for how to build your own bed rails. And there's 12 tie-down hooks in the bed. And the tailgate, they're calling it the multi-position tailgate. The bed is wide enough. It's 53 inches wide, so you can put 4x8 sheets of plywood or drywall in there above the wheel wells. But because it's going to be above the wheel wells, you know, if you just put the tailgate down, the boards would be slanting down. So they have this multi-position tailgate that allows you to take the cables off and hook them at a different position, so that the tailgate would be halfway down, so it'll support the boards, so they're actually tilting slightly down into the bed, so they don't slide out.
The coolest part of it as I'm reading the giant press release is that the tailgate features tie down clamps that double as bottle openers. So, you know.
Oh, yes, they show that in the video too. Yeah. So, when you get to your campsite or whatever, you know, or tailgate party, you got your bottle opener right there.
Right there handy. You don't have to worry about it. It's built into your truck. That's kind of fun,
yeah,
actually.
Yeah. I think this is going to be a very interesting segment to watch, cuz, you know, when they brought the new Ranger out, you know, it's substantially larger than the old generation Ranger, you know, that a lot of people were fans of. This Maverick actually slots in. If you remember the size of the old Ranger, and there's actually two of them in my neighborhood here, nearby me. One's a regular cab, and one's the extended cab version. And this actually slots in midway between those two. So it's a little bit longer than the regular cab old style Ranger, but shorter than the extended cab. But because this one's a true four door, you've actually got room, you know, the back seat, actual human beings can sit in the back seat of this thing, as opposed to, you know, in the old extended cab Rangers where they just had the little flip down benches in there. Mm-hmm. That, you know, nobody could really sit there.
You sit down sideways and just look at the person sitting across from you.
Right.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
No, I think that there's only, I mean, like you said, the only real competition in this size is going to be the Hyundai Santa Cruz, which I think is coming out towards it's also due this year, I believe.
This summer.
This summer. So I think this is a neat segment because, you know, the full-size truck segment is huge. You know, that's the F-150 sells a bajillion units every year. But there's a lot of people who want something smaller. And I think they're doing smaller and more city-friendly and just like, I want a little bit of truck. I don't want a medium. It's like despite being the smallest, it's going to be the just right size for a lot of people.
Yeah. And, you know, even in the base form, they're saying, you know, with the front-wheel drive hybrid, it can have a 1,500-pound payload. I think they said you can put like 37 bags of mulch in the back of
mulch,
this thing.
Man.
For
always
your
mulch.
Mulch run.
Always the mulch, man. It's always the mulch.
What else? And just, you know, a lot of neat. Oh, the interior. The armrests, they did this cutaway design on the armrests. So it's actually like a two-piece armrest where there's a missing segment in the middle, which allows you to actually put a 1-liter water bottle standing upright in the pocket in the door. You know, because they basically cut away part of the armrest so it fit in there. You know, just a lot of neat touches. You know, and you know, for that starting price of, you know, just over $20,000, you know, that's, you know, I don't think Hyundai has announced official pricing for the Santa Cruz yet. I think most estimates are going to be, or it's going to be somewhere in the mid-20s, so probably around $25,000. So this is likely to be several thousand dollars cheaper. Get 40 miles per gallon. You know, in the base form, the EPA numbers for the Santa Cruz just came out the other day. It's only getting 23 miles per gallon.
Ouch.
Yeah, so this is going to get 40, And it's only 4 inches longer than the Santa Cruz.
This is going to be like the little, and I thought this about the Santa Cruz when Hyundai showed it off at the Tucson event. We got a look at it and got some hands-on time with it. It feels like such the, like, it's not like the act, you know, the active lifestyle thing, but mm-hmm. truly, like, it's not just like, oh, we're going to make this look rugged so I can throw my bike in the back. It's like, no, we want you to be able to throw your stuff in the back of this and actually use this and have fun with this. Yeah. We're putting cool stuff in here so you can make it whatever you want to make it. If you're at the beach with your friends, if you're going, you know, the mountains with your friends, if you're just going to your friend's house and hang out in his backyard, this truck is going to make that more fun. Like, it really does feel like the let's go out and have fun truck, not the get work done, although you can get a little bit done with this, just the go out and have fun truck. I think it's fantastic. From what this is showing us right now, I think it's going to do phenomenal.
Bring back the Baja. That's what I'm saying. I think everyone needs to have a nice smaller truck. I like the idea of a smaller truck. The big trucks, they don't make, for me personally, I don't tow anything. I don't need a gigantic monstrosity sitting in my, you know, sucking up gas and taking up, you know, more space than my first apartment in San Francisco. I need something small that I can throw stuff in the back. I can pick up mulch. And I swear to God, I pick up mulch all the time. I don't know what happens when you buy a house. Mulch just covers up everything. It's like,
I haven't picked up mulch. It's been 2 weeks since we've gotten mulch, Roberto, and I don't know that I've ever gone that long without buying mulch, and I'm a little off kilter because of it. So, you know.
Yeah,
I mean the way my mulch schedule has worked out this year, it hasn't synchronized with when I've had trucks, so I've actually had to have it delivered, which
Oh, look at you, annoying. All fancy your pants. Deliveries. The rest of us wait until we have the appropriate vehicle to haul our mulch home ourselves.
Yeah, but I think a lot of the buzz around the Santa Cruz is going to transfer over to the Maverick, just because of the price point and the, you know, and I remember when I was in high school, like, I'm from a small town with a lot of people who have horses, and all the kids wanted a Ranger. They all wanted a Ranger. Everyone wanted the small truck that they could, you know, throw hay in, but they could go hang out with their friends in and throw all their other stuff in, and then maybe haul like a small horse trailer with like a single horse. And, you know, I feel like those, the small truck, they're coming back, and we got to bring back Mini Truck and Magazine.
Oh yeah. That's all. I drove a 1984 GMC S15 all through college and, you know, first year or two after that. And, you know, that was a great size truck, you know, for what I needed it for, you know, cause my engineering program was a co-op. So I was going back and forth to school, you know, alternating back and forth between school and work every semester. And, you know, so I would just throw all my shit in the back of that thing. It was great. It was fantastic. And you know, it was easy on gas. And
you guys, just so that you know, that's an official truck. There is, in fact, a Maverick first edition package.
Of
course. So there you go.
Because
if you were questioning it, you know they mean it. There's a first edition package, and I love this. One of the things is it comes in carbonized gray, Area 51, and Rapid Red, unique to the first edition.
Area 51.
What's Area 51? What's that one?
It's probably got a little alien, like, Easter eggs on it.
It could be green. Probably. It could be like alien green. Like that electric lime they have over at Toyota.
I don't think they showed that in the briefing, so I don't know what it looks like.
Area 51, I need to know. What color is that? Guesses? Yeah. Anybody? I'm going with green. Because they have red, they have gray.
Seems reasonable.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Like that like sort of Incredible Hulk, like Green Lantern-y green that all the OEMs are doing now.
Yeah. And, you know, and Ford's been doing some interesting colors, you know, like the Ranger Tremor that I have in the driveway right now, which we'll talk about next week, is in cyber orange. You know, so this thing is
even the names are cool.
Very bright. Yeah. I'll be curious to see what Area 51 looks like.
We should ask. I should ask Ford. Somebody tell me what Area 51 is.
It might just be Black Edition.
That will be so disappointing, Roberto.
It's
just
it's
black.
Gotta be green.
Black?
Yeah.
You can't call that. That has to be something like, you know, that has to be something else. No, it's not black. Gray, red, and black.
It's got to be a bright neon green.
I'm going to ask someone. It has to be green. I'm going with green. If it's black, I'm going to be really sad now because I'm expecting bright green.
All right. Let's see. I think that's all we had for this week. I think we hit everything on the list. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
No,
or
that's it.
You got anything exciting coming up this week?
I'm going to Seattle.
For what?
Just because. And I'm going to get to experience the... Just because. Weird. And I'm going to get to drive this week the Jeep Grand Cherokee L. So, yeah.
Nice.
That'll be the beginning of the week. Start in Detroit, end up in Seattle.
I'll be driving a...
You going to be in Detroit this week?
What's that?
You going to be in Detroit?
I am going to be in Detroit.
For the Grand Cherokee? Or?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get invited to that.
Oh, ouch, sorry.
You know what? You both get to go to drive other cars that I don't get to drive. So.
Yeah. You know, but then I go
to things and they're like, hey, I think it's just the way of the job.
Yep. You just never know. One week you're going 20 places, the next week you get to sit home. Just it's all about balance. So
yeah. All right. You got anything else, Robbie?
I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about the car I'm driving next week. I will have the 4XE though. Or 4xE, not the 4XE. I'm sorry.
4xE, not 4XE, 4xE.
I will have the 4xE next week as well. But I'm driving something else. I can't remember if I'm allowed to say what I'm going to be driving next week.
All right.
Okay, well, so when we stop recording, that. You need to tell us because that's not fair.
So that means that everybody has to come back and listen to the next show.
To find out the mystery vehicle.
What did Robbie drive?
We'll be driving. Tune in next week.
Is it the Area 51 Maverick?
He knows what the color is. He's not telling me.
Black as night.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for listening, and make sure you stay subscribed and tell your friends about the show, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.